reino de los cielos, el reino de Dios, se parece a lo que sucede cuando un hombre siembra la semilla en la tierra, que pasan las noches y los días, y sin que él sepa cómo, la semilla termina y crece. Y la tierra, por sí sola, va produciendo el fruto. Primero los tallos, luego las espigas y después los granos en las espigas. Y cuando ya están maduros los granos, el hombre echa mano de la hoz, pues ha llegado el tiempo de la cosecha. Les digo también, ¿con qué compararemos el reino de Dios? ¿Con qué parábola lo podremos representar? Es como una semilla de mostaza, y cuando se siembra, es la más pequeña de las semillas, pero una vez sembrada, crece y se convierte en el mayor de los arbustos, justicia. Claro, dándose antes, pues, también, pero no da esperanza, porque Cristo vive entre nosotros, no nos sirve, y Él nos garantiza que la venida de este hogar es el reino de Dios, en medio de nosotros, y nos damos, permitamos que su palabra, su enseñanza, el Espíritu Santo, que entre en nuestros corazones y vayamos construyendo ese reino de Dios, que en justicia y paz, pasando sus mandamientos, su enseñanza.
Grateful to Father Ronaldo, which was helping for giving me a couple of minutes' grace to begin. I literally came from the airport, which means I look and feel and probably smell what we have. But it was important to me that if we made it in time, that this be the first thing that I do on returning from the trip. Not because I think God's going to get me if I don't get my mask on today. Pretty sure after 30 hours on the plane, God can get it. But because it's important to me that this is what we do. There has been an intuition around the saints in the last, we'll say 40 years, if you might remember from your family. But St. John Paul II really recovered this ancient tradition, which is that saints make saints. Saints help make other saints. Not necessarily in a genetic way. It's not like my mom and my dad are holy, so I automatically get it. If you all know families where that didn't work, right? But rather that proximity, like being next to holy people, their holiness kind of rubs off on us. And so very often, families are where we learn holiness. St. John Bosco lost his father at a very early age, and so his mother was able to raise several boys by herself. In the first year or so after their dad died, she was very depressed. Probably today, social services for the sleuthin or something. But she had people to support her. Sisters and her own mother, family helped until she got over the hump of depression. And once she was past that, she was able to really take care of her boys most seriously. And so she helped make a saint, which is why today we're preparing for the canonization of St. John Bosco's mother. Saints make saints. The contrary is true too, and that's at least part of what's going on in the story of David and Bathsheba. It's not poor Bathsheba's necessarily a problem. It's hard to know what's going on there. But listen to the introduction that the author of this book of Samuel that starts this part of David's story with. At the turn of the year, when kings go out on campaign, David sent out Joab along with his officers and the army of Israel, and they besieged the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah. At the turn of the year, when the king is supposed to be riding at the head of his army to show his men what it means to be brave, David is lounging around in his basement. He's not doing what he's supposed to do. King is supposed to be with his troops in battle, and there they forge one another in holiness, in real bravery, and what we would understand as Christian valor. And David, who is on the whole, in the grand scheme of things, a good man, is in this moment letting it slack. And there are consequences to letting it slack. After he takes Bathsheba, he's caught, and he has to do something about her husband. Her husband, notice, is doing exactly what he's supposed to do. So he is with the troops when he's in those with whom you share your heart, and whether or not that heart comes to bear the image of the Lord. It's worth remembering, though, that even confronted tonight with David's sin, the Lord doesn't allow David to stay in the midst of his greatest mistake. King David, the greatest of the kings of Israel, is a rapist and a murderer. But he is not only a rapist and a murderer. Which is good news for us, because, well, probably none of us are those things. We are literally all thieves and liars. Everyone else. And probably some other things too. But I'll let you sort of add for yourself. But you are not only a thief and a liar. You are not simply the sum total of your worst mistakes. The song that she sang in the middle is David's song of repentance. He doesn't sing it until a little bit later in the book. But he writes it when the prophet confronts him with his sin, with Bathsheba, with Uriah, and everything that follows. Listen again to David's words. Let them be ours, so that we might remember why it is we keep the company we do. Have mercy on me, O God, in your kindness, and the greatness of your compassion blot out my offense. Wash me more and more from my guilt, and cleanse me of my sin. For I acknowledge my offense, my sin is always before me. Against you only have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight. I have done such evil in your sight that you are just in your sentence, blameless to be condemned. Truly, in guilt that is born, even as my mother conceived me in sin. Let me hear the sounds of